Number 1. Afghan Martyrs. The martyrdom of Sahibzada Sayyid Abdul Latif and Maulvi Abdul Rahman of Afghanistan and the events which followed. May God give rulers His special protection and save them from the consequences of errors in the commission of which they had no hand. Many years ago, Hazrat Mirza Sahib received a revelation. Shatani tudbahani wa kullu man alayha fan. Two goats will be slaughtered. Everyone who lives here will meet this end. The word shatan, two goats, can be a symbol for women or for loyal and obedient subjects. So much is clear from the generally accepted meaning of dream symbols. If we take the word to mean women, then the sentence does not make sense. Women are not slaughtered. It is men who are slaughtered. Shatan, goats, therefore mean two men distinguished for their loyalty to their king and for their spirit of service. The revelation says that two loyal and innocent servants of a king, not guilty of any offence against the state and certainly not deserving the death penalty, will be put to death. The second part of the revelation, and all those who live on this earth must meet their end, points to death and destruction which will follow the killing of the innocent pair. The revelation does not mention the country in which the event will take place, but the words used make clear that 1. The prophecy relates not to a peaceful country, but to a country in which law-abiding citizens can be murdered to appease the anger of the excited masses. 2. The murdered persons are the prophet's own followers. Otherwise, the allusion to two victims in the prophecy has little point. 3. The murders were to be unjust and wrong, not the result of any political crime. And 4. As a result of these unjust murders, general destruction was to overtake the country in which the murders were due to take place. These 4 points make the prophecy very different from ordinary prophecies. If the name of the country has been omitted, this does not make the prophecy less clear. The 4 points which the prophecy entails prove its importance. They cannot synchronize by accident. For about 20 years after its publication, nothing happened. Then a series of events began which resulted eventually in a strange fulfillment of the prophecy. It so happened that books by Hazrat Mirza Sahib found their way to Afghanistan and into the hand of an Afghan saint and scholar, Sahibzada Sayyid Abdul Latif of Khost, who was held in great esteem by all classes in Afghanistan and revered for his piety and purity by devoted friends and followers, among them members of the ruling family. The Sayyid read the books and decided that Hazrat Mirza Sahib was a true claimant. He sent one of his disciples to Qadian to make further inquiries, authorizing him to take the oath of fealty if he felt so persuaded. This disciple was Maulvi Abdul Rahman. The Maulvi travelled to Qadian and took the oath for himself and on behalf of his leader, Sahibzada Sayyid Abdul Latif. When he returned to Afghanistan with more books by Hazrat Mirza Sahib, he decided to go first to Kabul so as to acquaint the ruler with this new discovery. As soon as Maulvi Abdul Rahman reached Kabul, some unpatriotic and unwise individuals moved the Amir Habibullah Khan against him. This man had become an apostate, they said. He had gone beyond the pale of Islam and the punishment was death. The Amir was coaxed into signing a fatwa of death. Maulvi Abdul Rahman was put to death most cruelly. He had not yet been to his village. He had decided to go first to his king to tell him that the promised Messiah and Mahdi had come. He did so out of special regard and devotion for his king. But he was rewarded by death. A mantle was twisted tight round his neck. He was strangled to death. The hand of God was working. 20 years before, God had foretold the murder of two innocent and loyal subjects of the Emir. One of the two had been murdered. 1 or 2 years later, Sahibzada Sayyid Abdul Latif left Afghanistan with the intention of performing Hajj. Having already entered into Bayt, oath, and joined Hazrat Mirza Sahib, he decided to visit Qadian and from thence the holy places. At Qadian, he met Hazrat Mirza Sahib. The impression he had received from his books was deepened. His pure heart was filled with the light of God. So absorbed did he become that he decided to perform the Hajj later and spend more time at Qadian. After a few months' stay, he went back to Afghanistan. He also decided to acquaint his king with what he had seen and found. Reaching Khost, he wrote letters to some courtiers. They and others got to know what had happened and decided to set the Emir Habibullah Khan, father of King Amanullah, against the Sahibzada. They made many false statements and persuaded the Emir to have Sahibzada Abdul Latif brought to Kabul under arrest. Orders were sent to Khost and the Sahibzada was brought to Kabul. At Kabul, the Sahibzada was handed over to the mullahs. The mullahs could prove nothing against him. Then, some individuals, more selfish than patriotic, excited the Emir Habibullah Khan and told him that if the Sahibzada was set free and his influence allowed to spread, people would lose their ardour for jihad and this would harm the government of Afghanistan. The Sahibzada was ordered to be stoned. The Emir Habibullah Khan, out of feeling for the Sahibzada, asked him to give up his belief and announce his recantation. The Sahibzada replied that he had found the true Islam. Should he recant and become a kafir? He was not prepared to give up a truth he had accepted after due deliberation. When it became clear that the Sahibzada would not recant, he was taken out of the capital and stoned in the presence of a large crowd. A loyal and self-sacrificing subject became the victim of selfish and self-indulgent intriguers. They cheated the Emir when they told him that if the Sahibzada survived, he would be a danger to his country. The truth is that men like the Sahibzada are a shield for their country. For their sake, God repels many disasters to which the country is liable. These cruel advisers told the Emir that the Sahibzada's influence would reduce the desire for jihad. But they did not tell the Emir that one part of the beliefs which the Sahibzada had accepted was loyalty to the government under which one lives. This teaching, had it been allowed to spread, would have put an end to internecine quarrels in Afghanistan and made the country loyal and patriotic, ready to stand by authority in all difficulties. Nor did they tell the Emir that Hazrat Mirza Sahib taught against intrigues, corruption, deceit, and hypocrisy. They did not tell the Emir that Hazrat Mirza Sahib not only taught, but also insisted on the observance of patriotic virtues. If the Sahibzada's influence had been allowed to spread, it could only have ushered in peace and progress. Nor did they tell the Amir that the jihad which Sahibzada Sayyid Abdul Latif had learnt to deny was the jihad which seeks to force Islam on non-Muslims through war and violence. This kind of jihad was no part of Islam. On the contrary, it was an offence against Islam. The Sahibzada was against this jihad, not against the jihad which the Holy Prophet, on whom be peace and the blessings of God, had taught and practiced. The Holy Prophet's jihad was defence against those who attacked Muslims to force them from their faith. Nor was the Sahibzada against legitimate political wars, which one people may have to wage against another to preserve their political freedom and independence. What the Sahibzada had learnt to believe under the influence of Hazrat Mirza Sahib was that Islam was against making war on any people in the name of jihad and in the name of Islam, so long as that people had not interfered with the religion of Islam. To do so was to harm Islam and misrepresent its teachings and its ideals. The political interests of a country were quite another matter. Of such interests, each country was its own best judge. If these interests necessitated war, war was justified. But such a war could not be called jihad. A victory wrongly won in the name of Islam, or won at the expense of the good name of its teaching, was worse than defeat in which the good name of Islam had been safeguarded. In short, Sahibzada Sayyid Abdul Latif died a martyr, an end brought about by cruel and relentless cheating. The revelation, two goats will be slaughtered, was fulfilled. Two followers of the promised Messiah, loyal and devoted subjects of their king, were slaughtered. There remained the second part of the prophecy, which foretold general destruction. Not 1 month after the stoning of the Sahibzada, Kabul found itself in the grip of a cholera epidemic. So many people died that the entire population was struck with fear. Everybody felt that the pestilence had come as punishment from God for the foul murder of the innocent Sayyid. An unconcerned observer, Frank Martin, who was for many years engineer-in-chief to the government of Afghanistan, wrote in his book, Under the Absolute Amir, that this epidemic was quite unexpected. Considering earlier epidemics in Afghanistan and the rate at which they had followed one another, a new epidemic could have been ruled out for years. The sudden appearance of cholera was, therefore, a sign of God. The event had been revealed to his messenger 28 years before. The wonder of it is that, to reinforce the prophecy, as it were, Sahibzada Sayyid Abdul Latif himself had a premonition of it. The Sahibzada had announced that he could see dangerous days coming after his own martyrdom. The pestilence attacked every home in Kabul. It spared neither the poor nor the rich, nor those wont to take preventative measures taught by medical science. But especially seized were those who had taken a prominent part in the stoning of the late Sayyid. Some of them died. Others lost their near relations. The revelation took its time, but met with literal fulfillment. Awful signs appeared. God proclaimed the authenticity and importance of his messenger. The far-seeing understood it as a divine sign and believed. Such a prophecy cannot be invented by any mortal. What could a man foretell that he would soon enlist a large number of followers? Could he say that a time would come when large numbers of people would join him? That his ideas would have travelled from his own country into other countries, and that then in some distant country two of his followers would lose their lives, not because of sedition or unpatriotic activities, but because of their belief in their leader? Could he say further that when the innocent pair had been put to death, God would send a tremendous affliction into the country, and that so great would be the destruction wrought by it that it would die? Such a clear and definite prophecy could not be formulated by any man. If it could, there would be no difference between the word of God and the word of man. There is one misunderstanding which I wish to clear up. The prophecy contains the words, "All who live on the earth will meet with destruction." It may be said that all men in Afghanistan did not die. Some died, but many were saved. I need only say that "kul" in Arabic may mean all or some. Here it seems "kul" means some. In the Holy Quran we read of God revealing to the bee thus, "thumma kuli min kulli thamarat," then eat of every kind of fruit. Everybody knows that not every bee alights on every kind of fruit. Therefore, kul in the prophecy really means some or many. Similarly, we read in the Quran of Queen Saba, وَأُوتِيَتْ مِنْ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ, and she has been given everything. The description is of a queen who was the ruler of a small territory. What the verse means is that the queen had a large share of the blessings of this world. It only means that whenever and wherever the word kul is used, it means some good quantity or some significant number. The cholera epidemic which appeared in Kabul soon after the stoning of the lamented Sahibzada shows these two important features. It struck terror into the people at large, and a good number out of them met their death by it. So much so that a European writer, unaware of its significance for any revelation, mentioned it in his book. A second difficulty which may be raised about the prophecy is that the prophetic description is tudbahan, i.e. slaughtered. But this description does not apply to the two martyrs. One was strangled to death, the other was stoned. The revelational description therefore does not apply to the deaths. This difficulty arises from lack of thought or insight. The Arabic root dhibah, slaughtering, means two things: being slaughtered and being put to an end, the method of doing so being left undetermined. In the Holy Quran, we have many examples of this use of the word dhibah. In the narrative of Moses, we are told that the Egyptians slew your sons and spared your women. Chapter 2, verse 50. The word used is from the root dhibah, which strictly should mean that the only method of killing the males adopted by the Egyptians was that of slaughtering or cutting the throat. This is not true. It is known from history that the Egyptians employed many different methods of killing the Israelite males. First, the midwives had orders to kill the male children born in Israelite homes. When the midwives hesitated, the Egyptian pharaoh ordered them to be thrown into the river. Exodus chapter 1 verse 22, Acts chapter 7 verse 19, and Talmud. Moreover, the Arabic lexicon Tajul Urus, volume 1 page 141, says that at least one meaning of dhiba is to destroy. It is wrong, therefore, to say that the word dhiba can only mean to be slaughtered, as a word can be used for other forms of killing. And wrong to find fault with the prophecy by saying that the Sahibzada was stoned and not slaughtered.